Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Have you ever wondered what your life could be like if you were living up to your full potential? How great your family relationships could be? How far you could go in your career? What impact and legacy you could make in life? Today, you're going to meet a man who is committed to maxing out in life and chasing his best self every day. But he wasn't always like that. Years ago, he was put in a box of being the shy and lonely little skinny kid. His home life was really, really dysfunctional, and he didn't know what to do. Then one day he had what is known as an inciting incident. And this young man found his calling and began an epic hero's journey. Our hero's name is Ed Mylett, and today he's the multimillionaire entrepreneur living in a mansion on a beachfront property in California. He speaks all over the world in front of tens of thousands of people, and he lives the perfect life. But back in the day, he was just shy little Eddie, and today you're going to find out how he broke free through a life of service. You can't miss a minute of this epic episode. It'll give you goosebumps and show you how to overcome every obstacle. It's probably Ed's best interview yet, and I ask him one powerful question that no one in his life has ever asked him before. This question shocked him, and the answer could change your life. Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio, and today's show reveals how you can and how you must go on your hero's journey to live your destiny. You'll want to listen to this epic episode at least twice, if not three times or more. Ed's hero's journey is going to inspire you, and he and I share a lot of the same systems for success. Now, he also loves my book, and he recommended it on his very first podcast episode back in 2016 because he is always looking for the slight edge. That's why Early to Rise Radio is brought to you by The Perfect Day Formula, my best-selling book on how to own your day and control your life and get the extra edge in life. Grab your copy at freeperfectdaybook.com or download the audiobook from Amazon so you can keep the motivation and momentum going. All right, Ed, when I meet certain people, they're, you know, you just describe them as a force of nature. And, you know, it's hard to believe you were not always that way. So let's begin at the start of what I call your hero's journey back in the day.
All right.
Tell us about that.
But the journey that I've been on?
Yeah. Like, so when you describe yourself as shy, young Ed, it's hard to believe.
Yeah. Shy young Ed was for sure who I was. As a little guy, I had kind of this convergence of circumstances that probably contributed to my shyness. So number one, I think I'm naturally pretty introverted, introspective dude. That's one.
Sure.
Two, I was small.
Okay.
Much smaller than everybody else. Short of every single baseball picture or sports picture, I'm the kid holding the sign.
Late bloomer.
Late bloomer. And I don't know that, you know, I'm not 6'8 as it is now, right? So I had that contributed. There was some, you know, alcoholism and some dysfunction in my family. So that kind of contributes to insecurity, all that stress and strife. And then I was always introduced as little Eddie, the shy guy. Because my dad's name's also Ed. And so I think there's this convergence. And so I grew up walking around a very insecure, shy person for sure. And that guy is still right there all the time for me.
Okay.
Like if we went to high school together, even to this day, if I saw you at the mall kind of down in the distance, I'd probably duck into a store.
Interesting.
Just to go by, just to avoid that, I don't know, whatever it is thing. As much as I love people, there's this thing in me that's right there all the time that wants to stay the shy guy, it's quiet dude.
Yeah, and so, you know, being introduced as, you know, little Eddie, shy Eddie, you know, how did that put you in a box and how hard was it to overcome that, get out of that box, and what were you able to do that?
Yeah, really hard, because it's like every kid. You get handed kind of a script by your family. You don't know it, but there's all these unconscious scripts we get handed, right? Whether it's what we're going to do in our life, or our faith, our political beliefs, how we're supposed to behave. So my script was a great script. I grew up in a great family, but my script was certainly that I was supposed to be quiet, introverted, et cetera. Yeah, what helped change that for me was sports.
Okay.
I was a good athlete. I found a way there to express myself non-verbally. Yeah. I could do it athletically, right? Which then started to contribute to my self-confidence. And I learned through sports that I was capable because I wasn't a big dude. I learned through sports, hey, there really are these basic things. Like, I can outwork dudes. I do show up earlier. I leave later. I am coachable. I prepare more than most people. So all of my confidence in business started to come from those same things. Preparation, getting there earlier, leaving later, like really basic things. Here's the difference. People do those things, but they're not conscious of getting credit for it.
Yeah.
So I'm about stacking credit all the time, building blocks, right? So when I do go to the gym when I'm supposed to in the morning, when I do eat well, there's this really weird thing I do. I actually give myself credit. You're doing it again, man. You're doing it, champion. You're doing it, champion. Just like I would when I was in the cage taking 10 extra swings at batting practice,
yep,
or getting there to stretch before other guys. It's not just doing it. It's stacking the credit onto yourself. And so you stack all that stuff up kind of over time. I went, you know what? I'm feeling pretty good about myself right now. But not about me necessarily, but what I'm capable of.
Right. So when you're coaching a young mentee these days, yeah, you know, bringing somebody up in your organization, how do you convey that message to them and how do they get started and how would somebody watching this build that habit?
Yeah. Like I always say, so self-confidence is the process of keeping promises that you make to yourself, period. So self-confidence is a process by you have built self-trust.
Okay.
And so I don't think winning's that difficult. I think people consciously try to make winning complicated so they have an out. Like, okay, oh, I didn't win because it's so difficult. And then there's this whole universe that contributes to complicating winning and self-confidence. Who has invested interest in that? Every guy who's writing a book. Now, you and I write books that actually help people, but people who write books, who give you seminars, who media, anything we can do to contribute to you thinking winning's this mystical, complicated, unbelievable, you know, thing that you can only a few of us can reach to, serves the world, serves us too. And so what I try to do is make winning easy, make it simple for people, and I demand it of them because I know what their capacity is. And so I'm not really easy to be around if I coach you, because once I believe in you, mm-hmm, once I see your giftedness, once I see your greatness in you, like, you've lost all permission to lose with me.
Right.
I demand super freaking high standards from people. And I think that demand from me also gives people confidence. Like, he wouldn't demand or expect these great things from me if I weren't supposed to do them. And so I don't apologize for being really demanding on people. It's probably my backbone of my belief in leading people is high, high standards.
Yeah, and that seems to be a common trend among the real high performers, because I'm a real big fan of Relentless by Tim Grover, a friend of yours.
Yeah.
And I mean, my goodness, that thing gets me so fired up. Yeah. If I have a bad day, a couple pages of that, I'm right back on track. And again, it's like, hold yourself to a higher standard, right?
Yeah, it's, Grover, by the way, lives that. One of my really good friends, he lives that standard. I'm like, I think that, listen, if you just left me to my own devices, I'm not a robot. I'm a lazy person. I like watching TV. I don't mind sleeping. So that's why I'm so disciplined. Like, I have to get up. I get up at 4 a.m.,
yep,
but I have to get up. I know you're big on morning routine too. I have to have routines and habits and disciplines, because left to my own devices, I'm that insecure, quiet, shy, undisciplined dude. So I've set up structures around myself, processes and systems, just like I do with the people that I lead. That overrides, because people think this, oh, the people that win are the most motivated.
Right.
They're the most inspired.
Well, most talented.
They're the most talented. And by the way, I wish that were true, but it's not. Actually, the people that win are able to get the job done on the days they're not motivated. That's the separator. Motivation and inspiration is this really fine line. Yeah, maybe I'm a little bit more fired up than the average guy from time to time. But I'm actually more fired up because of the work I do, not the other way around, right? So most times, my inspiration is instigated through my effort and process, not the reverse. Most people are sitting around like waiting for this divine thing to happen. Now I'm going to go to work. Mine's my routine. Mine's my self-confidence. Mine's stacking behaviors that serve me, not the other way around. So that's why you've won. You've won not because you're more motivated or inspired. You got better habits, rituals, and disciplines than most people do. That's why we've both won.
You know, it's so funny that you describe yourself as that lazy person, because mm-hmm, I tell people the only reason I'm disciplined is because I'm the most lazy guy in the world. Hello. I want to watch TV. I want to sit around and do nothing.
Hello.
And I use this analogy that I built a fence around myself, ooh, to block out the temptations so that I get it done. That's why I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, because if I try to do the same thing at 9, forget about it. Wow. I'm on ESPN.com or something,
right,
you know?
But can I say one thing about that? Because yeah, I know that about you too. I almost feel like because I may not have total inward self-confidence all the time, mm-hmm, I know I better get up earlier than a guy who's better than me.
Got it.
I better get in the gym for a dude who's got better genetics than me. I better make 10 more phone calls than someone who might be a better salesperson than me. And so I'm just going to out-effort you. And in the world today, here's what's really crazy about today's world. It suits up for guys like me and you. It suits up for ladies and gentlemen who are watching this who are like, maybe I'm not the most gifted or talented or the smartest. Let me tell you why. Information's free now. It's everywhere. You can just Google something. Years ago, the separator was a guy like Steve Jobs or Wozniak. Like, what did they know other people didn't know, right? Well, nowadays, that's not true at all. We all know the same stuff. It's who can execute. Who can get up and get after? Who can do more reps? Who can be more aggressive, right? Who can be the person who out-executes everybody else? That sets up good for someone like me and you because of our habits, rituals, and disciplines.
Absolutely. So we share that, and we also share another thing, which is a little more negative, is we both had alcoholic fathers. Mm. And something for me, a personal question that I just wanted to ask is, how the heck were you able, and you and your family and your father, able to help your dad beat the bottle? Because my dad wasn't able to do that. We never got through to him, and he drank himself to death. So what was the, you know, turning point?
I'm sorry about that with your father, by the way. No one has ever asked me that before in every interview I've ever done, and no one personally has ever asked me that before. So I appreciate that question.
Because it's so hard. Everybody doesn't believe it can be done.
Yeah, so. Well, I know that it can be done because I lived it. I can tell you that, by the way, my dad just got his cake yesterday. I think it's 32 years of sobriety. Just yesterday, I was talking to my dad about it. And so for my dad, we were both reminiscing yesterday. I'll make it as short an answer as I can. But he was reminiscing with me the conversation he had where he finally told me he was going to get sober. And I remember we pulled over at where I went to elementary school. I wasn't in elementary school. And he sat me down. And he goes, listen, I just want you to know I'm gonna go try to stop drinking. And then he took me through the reasons. Only time I've ever seen my dad cry in his life. And I think my dad, this is, seems really basic, but I'll give you two things that my dad did. My family didn't do it. My dad did. My dad gets credit for being sober. My dad's reasons for getting sober and his sobriety, okay, finally were much greater than his reasons to drink and his addiction to drinking. The reasons got so big. He was going to lose his family. Yep. He was going to lose everything, and he made that decision. Now, here's what's different for my dad. I'm not telling anybody how to get sober because I don't have that issue.
Sure.
For my dad, it was going and getting the best possible care he could. So I know my dad went to a treatment center. I don't know where it was. But my dad now has been sober for 32 years, I think it is, I said. Mm-hmm. My dad still goes to 3 or 4 meetings every week. So my dad's in what you would call one of those programs, right? Yeah. And my dad has gone to multiple meetings a week, every single week for 32 years. And so he doesn't think he's got it beat. He doesn't think it's something that's in the rearview mirror. My dad fights that fight every day. 32 years from now, my dad was at a meeting yesterday when we talked to him. And so my dad's process is so interesting, brother. It comes back to just what we talked about earlier. My dad's built around him the habits and rituals and disciplines that overrode his weakness and desire. Ours is our laziness, right? Yeah. My dad's was his addiction to alcohol. I think there's a physical addiction you have to break as well. But my dad has just set up the mentors.
Yeah.
You have a sponsor in that program, people around him, a support group, and the processes. And it's 32 years later, still on a meeting Saturday morning, still at a meeting on Thursday afternoon. My dad still does his meetings. That's why I'm so proud of him, because I know how much the work he's put in to stay sober.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's just such a big lesson right there. For it doesn't matter what anybody is struggling with,
that's right? Yep. You have to get the huge reasons, and then you better develop the habits, rituals, disciplines, and the people around you to support it. And that's what's worked for my dad. I know other people have gotten sober other ways, but my dad's the perfect example of how to win. And here's what's really cool. He never thinks he's made it. And that's what the great achievers have.
Yeah.
The great achievers are, they never think they've arrived. They're constantly fighting to get better, constantly for better rituals, constantly for more work. My dad still constantly is reading about his program, how to communicate it better, how to articulate it better. 32 years later, right? He's like, there's still more for me to know and learn. Wow. And that's with cancer, with being sick. My dad still goes on chemotherapy. My dad still goes to those meetings multiple times a week.
That is incredible. That's incredible. And it's, you know, it speaks to something that you were talking about with Bedros in your previous interview. Was like, when you were 22, you knew at 23 you needed to be better than you were 22. And then every year you wanted to get better and better and better.
Yes.
Now, there's something that when your father was back at that age and you had just come back from college with your baseball, you answered the call because your father went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting or something like that, came home and got you a job, and you answered the call.
Yes.
So what was that call, and how has that influenced you?
Changed my whole life. So everything in your life happens for you, not to you, right? So my dad comes home and says, listen, I got you a job. Get your ass up in the morning. You're going to McKinley Home for Boys. Didn't know what it was. Showed up there. I get there. I say, I'm here for the job. They say, what job? I said, I have no idea. I don't even know what you guys do. And what McKinley is a campus of group homes. Hundreds of boys in one place. All my boys were taken from their families for different reasons.
Yeah.
And so finally, as I'm walking out the door, I said this before, but I said, the guy's name's Tim. They're like, Tim who? I go, I don't know anything about him except he's an alcoholic. They're like, oh, Tim, drunk Tim. We know Tim, Cottage 8. So I go to Cottage 8. Minute I walk in there, there's these 10 boys, their eyes just looked at me, man. They were the same eyes I have because they came from dysfunction in their families, sure. Right? And in that minute, I became their big brother, their father. I lived with them. I was their holidays. I was the first one to get them when they got home from school every day. And my life changed because in that instance, I shifted. Like all my life before that, I was an athlete. Yeah. Ego, achievement, wealth, fame, prestige, right? In that instant, my life moved. I'm not just telling you, boom, service. Like, wow, making a difference for other people. Like, I fell in love with it, and it shifted me. Let me just say one thing. Life happens for you, not to you, on multiple levels. Number one, I don't go there to that job if my dad's not an alcoholic.
Right.
I don't even get the job. Number right. two, I don't connect with those boys the way I did if my dad weren't an alcoholic. I know what it's like to have that thing in your household that they had. Theirs was worse, but sure. I knew what it was like. And if I don't get that job, I never make it in business because I'd approach business from ego. I'd approach business from making money and not from service.
Right.
And I'd not be sitting here with you today. So that whole event from the day my dad started drinking to my dad's sobriety to walking in that door all happened for me in hindsight. Right? And in life, everything happens for you, not to you in hindsight. The power of life, the winning in life is appreciating it and knowing it now, not waiting for hindsight to teach you that.
Right. Absolutely. I love that phrase that life happens for you.
Always.
Absolutely. And so at what point did your strong faith enter the picture? Was that something you had when you were young or was that something you...
No. Good question. I was raised going to church.
Yeah.
But I don't certainly think I liked being there.
Right.
It was not a centerpiece of my life. Although we always prayed as a family.
Mm-hmm.
Before every baseball game, my dad would pray that, you know, God would keep me safe
okay.
and, you know, all that. So there was faith in my life. But it was really through meeting my wife that my faith got stronger. My wife's dad was a lay minister. Her brother's a pastor.
Okay.
And so I kind of entered into a family that has had this tremendous backbone of faith, right? And
yeah.
so I learned that was important too because the few times in my life where my ego has gotten bigger, not the few, the many, the many times my ego's gotten bigger, sort of the Lord has a way of sort of slapping me back and going, hey, man, this is not all you here.
Got it.
And so I'm a big believer in the parable of the sower in the Bible, which basically means it's both of you. In other words, you got to plant seeds and plant seeds and plant seeds. The rain's going to get some, the birds, the weather, but eventually there'll be a harvest if you keep planting those seeds. And so I remind myself of that all the time. My job's to plant the seeds. I can't control the harvest.
Sure.
Right? And that's my faith's up to the harvest. That's my beliefs.
Yeah. So you had your calling, you had life happening for
wow.
you, and you had your faith, and then you transferred that over to the financial world. So
yeah.
how did that then grow and manifest, you know, to the best of your abilities?
Blessing some of it. So I got into the financial services industry. Immediately, I showed a little promise.
Yep.
And I was smart, man. I made one good decision. I knew in baseball, I was one of those guys that played because I was undersized. I was real coachable.
Okay.
I was also a coach pleaser. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I wanted the coach to be proud of me. I wanted the coach, you know? And so when I got into business, just my processes were to find a coach.
Yeah.
And so I started seeking mentors and coaches way earlier than I deserved them, right? And so I had a few people, very successful people that I sought out, say, okay, and I started to do what they told me to do. And so I got a process of mentors around me that helped me a great, great deal. And then Tony Robbins was one of those guys, as yeah. you know. And then for me, I figured out pretty early on, business was a game of being able to communicate. I had to learn to communicate verbally and non-verbally.
Sure.
It wasn't something I was good at. And so for me, I tried to become a master communicator, master persuader of people, because I knew my intent was good. I just didn't know how to communicate my intent.
Isn't that amazing? You yeah. went from shy little Eddie to yes. describing yourself as master communicator.
Yeah, well, trying to be one, and right. I'm still trying to do that. But yeah, I figured it out. Like, all these people are good at communicating. I don't care whether, if you walk into a great restaurant, you know what makes the restaurant? Like, someone's there. There's that guy in every great restaurant or that woman's. This makes it feel like home when you walk in. They're great. It's not just the food. It's the ambiance. It's the people around you. Every successful business. Apple, they had Wozniak and these behind the scenes guys, but they had their communicator in Jobs. Mm-hmm. I call them an evangelist. All great business leaders are evangelical about their cause and their mission, and they have their own way of communicating it. Could be with words, could be with writing,
mm-hmm.
it could be with pictures, but they're evangelical about their cause. Oprah Winfrey's an evangelist, okay? Martha Stewart, Elon Musk's an evangelist. I'd like to think I'm one. Steve sure. Jobs is one. Mark Zuckerberg, in his way, is evangelical about Facebook. And so
sure.
Donald Trump has an evangelical cause about him. Barack Obama on the other side was an evangelical messenger. And so all great business people have that element about them. And it's their ability to transfer their belief and their energy to you about what they do.
Absolutely. And I love what you said about being, you know, going all the way back to being a coach pleaser and then seeking those mentors. Because I have a phrase that you, when you get a coach, when you get a mentor, you have to be accountable, and not just accountable, because accountability only goes so far, but accountable to somebody that you deeply do not want to disappoint.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. And so I realized that because Bedros helped me through a lot of stuff. I mean, I wasn't the most best communicator in the world. I was a little bit.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah, I was a little bit. He called me curmudgeonly and crusty back in the day. But every time, you know, we'd run a meeting and I, you know, wasn't up to my best self, I'd get this death stare from Bedros. And I looked up to him like as a big brother. And I realized, oh my goodness, I've hired coaches and I paid them a lot of money and I did the work, but not like to my full ability. But with him, I was accountable to somebody I deeply did not want to disappoint.
It's funny you say that, because just today, it's really interesting that we're talking about this. I put out an Instagram video just today, and I said, you want to be a great leader in business? So it's the reverse. You want to be the mentor or the leader?
Yeah.
I said, people need, you have to have an example and all that stuff, right? Obviously, you have to have credibility.
Yep.
But I said, they can have two things, man. Number one, people need to know you have their back.
Right.
Like, you have their back, like your best interest, they got you, right? And number two thing you got to have, you got to tell them the truth. You have to be candid, and that's what Bedros did for you. You knew he had your back, and he was candid. Rarest thing, it's a great book by Jack Welch, the title escapes me, but he talks a great deal in that book about candor and how rare it is in business that people say, hey, look, man, you don't have your act together right now.
Right.
I only have permission to do that if I've made deposits of having your back, that I believe in you, right? But once I've got that established, my job is to be candid and truthful with you. That's when you, and those are the people on the other side we don't want to disappoint,
right?
Because we know they believe in us, they know they care about us, and we know that they have our back, and so we don't want to disappoint those people. You're totally right about that.
Yeah, and you know, most people, when you are candid with them, they're like, thank goodness.
You got it.
Because nobody else is, right?
You got it.
So you had some false starts in your business, and you probably had false starts even as an athlete.
Sure.
How did you get through them?
Yeah, I still have them. There's still things I'm trying to do.
Sure.
This space that we're in right now, I feel like sometimes I'm getting it going and then I false start, right? And so I definitely had them as an athlete too. For me, all the false starts that I get when I'm moving forward towards anything, I'm honestly, this seems really corny, I'm a crazy guy about being self-aware.
Okay.
And so I think what a great entrepreneur is a self-aware entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. A weak entrepreneur is one who's oblivious to the mistakes they're making. They keep doing the same things over and over. They don't see learning lessons when they're constantly being fit. So it sounds hokey. You go, what can I learn from this?
Right.
But it's not just that. It's like I'm trying to be aware of how I'm perceived. What's the mistake? When we're done here, when I drive back to my next meeting, I'll be replaying this conversation. How could I have done better, right? What did I say that I couldn't have said? Did I express myself the right way? And so I'm a very, very self-aware person, and I have a tendency not to make the same mistake two times.
It's funny. I have at my workshops, which hopefully you'll be at one.
I told you I want to.
I have a little teaching thing I call watching the movie of your life. Every day, I tell people, you know, 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 9 o'clock. You sit there and you think, what did Ed want to do today? Okay, Ed wanted to do this interview. He wanted to have a great workout. He had to get to bed early tonight because he had a movie the next morning, or a flight the next morning. Yeah. And so, okay, now what did Ed do? Well, Ed went to Starbucks at 4 o'clock and got that coffee. And now he's tossing and turning. So it's cause and effect, right? It's that scientific method. I did this, this happened. And most people, like you said, they aren't self-aware, and they don't connect the dots, and they're like, I'm tired right now. It's 2 o'clock.
Yep.
It's because you went to Burger King at lunch.
I got to just acknowledge what you just said.
Like,
that's brilliant. And so I say something similar. And so this is how you become more self-aware. It's also how you can evaluate others. Like, is your spouse holding up their end of the bargain? Are your business partners holding their end of the bargain? And here's what I always tell people. Turn the sound off on their life and watch the video.
Oh.
Stop listening to what everybody says. Turn the sound off, just what you just said, and watch the video. Like, you wanted to accomplish a whole bunch today, right? Turn the sound off, all the things you said. What did you do? People's lives without the sound on, like silent movies, are extremely telling productions, right? Both for yourself and others. I love, and I want to absolutely second, watching the video of your day when you go to bed at night will tell you an awful lot about yourself. And by the way, when you turn that sound off, you'll be much more aware of other people's responses to you with the sound off, because you can watch it in the replay.
Yeah.
When I evaluate other people, someone says to me, I want to be this super stud, I want to be in great shape, or I want to be a millionaire, or I want to make 10 appointments this week. Turn the sound off. That's all great. Everybody says this crap. Turn the sound off and watch their day. Turn the sound off and watch the meeting. Turn the sound off and watch their week, their month, their year. I want to be a great dad. Really? Let's turn the sound off. What did you do when you walked in the house? And just watch what you do. It'll make you much more self-aware and aware of other people too. Love that.
Yeah, and you know, here's what the problem is. They say this and they do this.
You got it.
And it's that misalignment that hurts us so much.
Big time.
So you have always been chasing the future better you, as I believe you describe it.
I really am.
Going after your destiny, your peak potential.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us how important that is and you know, how did that mindset come about?
I tell you what, it's crazy. So I really do believe that your obsessions become your possessions, okay?
Got it.
And I'm obsessed with this guy that I haven't met yet, and mm-hmm. that's my future me.
Yeah.
And so the way it really happened was the Reader's Digest version is that I believe at the end of your life, if you're a Christian like I am, this isn't a faith message, Lord's going to say, well done, good and faithful servant. By the way, here's the dude I made you in my image and likeness to be. Here's where he should have gone, what he should have done, who he should have known, the experiences he should have had, the people he should have helped. At the end of my life, I'm obsessed with meeting this dude, and I want to be identical twins. I lived that life. I got to that point. A terrible end of a life would be we're complete strangers. Where it came from was originally, I'm at a car wash with my little guy. Mm-hmm. My son's 6 years old. I used to see the same guy there every Saturday after I'd go to my meeting and work. And finally one Saturday, like a lot of people do, he goes, hey, how old's your boy? I said, he's six. He goes, well, hey, puts the paper down. Enjoy the six-year-old, because the seven-year-old, when he's here, the six-year-old's gone forever. And when he turns eight, the seven-year-old's gone forever. And I didn't mean it rudely. I looked at him and I went, when did that process stop happening for you? And he just stared back at me and he went, I don't know. And I said, it's never supposed to stop.
Right.
The 50-year-old, when he's gone, the 51-year-old's a whole new person. And I remember thinking, I'm never doing this. I'm never going to be the guy at the car wash.
Right.
I want to be that guy. I want to be chasing that guy. And it just happened. My daughter the other day, we were having dinner. It was about 6 months ago. She goes, she's joking, but she's my harsh one. She goes, Dad, you're in a midlife crisis. And I go, what are you talking about? She goes, come on, man. You're growing this beard out. You're on social media.
Yeah,
I know. You're in one too, right? And I said, baby, guess this straight. I am in one. And I was in a pre-year birth crisis. I was in a 21-year-old crisis, a 25, a 30. I'm in a crisis to get to that next version of me. And I just got to tell you, man, I'm truly obsessed with that.
Yep.
Like, it's an actual true obsession of mine. I think about this mysterious dude all the time.
Well, what is he in 1 year from now?
In a year from now, well, one thing he will be is he's right now 204 pounds.
Okay.
And so I can tell you that in a year, he'll be 195, ripped and shredded again.
I love it.
And because he's not right now. In a year, he will have 1 million downloads per episode, the day it's released on his podcast. Right now, awesome. I average about 600,000 the day it's released. So I want that to be higher, although I just had one that did 2 million. So he will do that. And this guy will have, this is a big thing for me. I want to have my mastermind set up, and I want to have had 100 people that we've coached to go from 7 figures to 8 figures in their business.
Yep.
There's a whole line of different things. But what I can tell you, if you listen, you can tell from listening to me, I'm real clear on where this dude is in a year. I know. Who he'll be with. I know who he's going to be around. There's even two people he doesn't know right now very well. I'm not going to say on here, whom I will know.
Got it.
I'm going to know them. They'll be in my association because I got to upgrade my group that I associate with too.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
How does our viewer get that vision and the vision for their life so strong, so mm-hmm. clear? How do they go about doing that?
Yeah. Well, for me, it's repetition. And so it's a muscle that you build. And I remember thinking, what do I want? Like, what are my dreams? I don't have any idea. At first, I started to model other people's lives, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. Picking a model, going, I'd like to be like that person. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. And my first few big dreams were models of mine. Like, I'd like to be like whoever it was at that time, mm-hmm. for their financial, their spiritual, et cetera. The big thing for me is that, you know that I believe this, but I'm just going to say it. Your clarity comes through your associations. And so you have this identity that you have about yourself. It's like a thermostat that sits on the wall. I talk about this all the time. And it controls your damn life, okay? It sets the whole temperature for your life. People think it's the outside conditions, but in here it's a little warm right now.
Sure.
Let's say the thermostat was set at 80 degrees in here. If we open that door and cold air came in here, the thermostat will kick on. It will regulate the temperature in this room. No matter how cold the external condition is, it will warm this room back up to 80 degrees. The reverse is also true. If we blew a bunch of hot air in here, which I'm doing right now, okay, it would turn on the air conditioners and cool the room back down to 80 degrees. And so your life, your identity, the ideas, concepts, and beliefs that you hold about yourself, okay, control that thermostat. And no matter what you do, no matter what breathing exercise you do, no matter what goals you write down, no matter what actions you take, you will find a way to get to your current temperature eventually, somewhere or another. Life goes bad, you'll cool it back up. Life goes down, you'll heat it. So for me, It's clarity comes through changing that thermostat temperature, and that comes through who I associate with. And so as I add my group of people, like for example, let's just say it was faith.
Yeah.
You're a 200 degreeer in faith, I'm a 50 degreeer in faith. If we hung around each other every single day, somehow through that relationship, you'd heat me up somewhere in between you and I. Yeah. Now my identity is different. My expectations are different. The ideas and concepts I hold about myself are different. And so for me, it's not just as much about clarity as it is changing that damn identity will change your life. Everything else is just sort of everything else.
Amazing.
That's what I want to work on.
Yeah, you even have this saying, your vision was sown into your heart, it is a blessing from God.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it for people to understand that and live towards that legacy?
Well, if you believe in God, and by the way, I'm not here to convince you about that, but one of my most frustrating things, those of you that say, I do believe in God, whatever your faith is, you'd be Hindu, Jew, Muslim, Christian, okay? Okay, what's interesting to me is people who say they believe in God, they bring God into their meal. They
sure.
pray it as the meal. They bring God into church on Sunday. They bring God into their house, but they check God at the door in business. They check God at the door when it comes to money. They check God at the door when it comes to influence and change in their life. Somehow God's not with you there, right? So my formula is real simple. God's with me always. He's got my back always. He's my number one business partner. I pray to him every single day for my best, for his will to be done with my effort. And so the strength for me, God sowed into me a vision, but God sowed himself into me. And so when I walk, I carry a bold, great God with me. Most of my self-confidence comes from keeping promises to myself, but the real thing in the background there all the time for me is my faith. God's got my back, man. You talk about trusting somebody, people will let you down. God will never let you down. And so I'm a huge, huge believer in telling people of whatever your faith is, bring him into your business. Bring him into your finances. He's there anyway. Acknowledge him. Ask for his favor and blessings.
Amazing. And then so when things do get ugly for some people, faith or not, faith-based, how do they embrace it and get through that?
How do they get through a difficult time?
Yes.
Yeah, see, this is the rub. Here's the thing. You're going to get knocked down, okay? I got knocked down a million times in my life, tons of times, okay? And everyone actually gets up.
Yeah.
That's the misnomer. It's not whether you're going to get up. You're going to get up. What do you do, lay there the rest of your life? The measurement isn't whether you get up. Here's the difference with the champions. You already know this with all the people you've coached, and that's why you're so successful. It's how quickly.
Yeah.
It's how quickly. It's your response time. And so the key thing is, there's this great scene in one of Sly's movies where he says, get up, right? Get up. And so for me, when I'm knocked down, I'm like, get up. And I'll be candid with you. The last 48 hours for me, multiple areas in my life have not been great.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple areas. You know that my dad's going through a treatment and stuff too, okay?
Sure.
I'm just telling you, when I get knocked down, I'm getting up. That's an inevitability. So are you. Now. And so I put myself into immediate, massive action. For me, the antidote is my gratitude. And then you know what? Here's the thing. I'm going to bust my ass through this right now. I'm going to grind. The difference with me is I don't stay down very long. And so my message to you is, you're going to get up anyway. Get up immediately. Immediately get up and take an action towards correcting it, towards progress. Phone call, meeting, stretching, workout, activity, planning, visualization, activity, something now to shake the state, to change the script, right? You're living this, I'm done. Change the script, new chapter, start writing. That's what I gotta do. You gotta do it quickly.
Motion beats meditation is what I say. Action beats anxiety because.
I'm stealing that.
Yeah, it's good. So for my friend listening.
Yep.
That knows that they are capable of so much more.
Mm-hmm.
What words do you leave them with so they can go out and make life happen for them, yep. not to them?
Great question. You are enough. You are enough as you are. Listen to me on this. Everything you need to win is within you right now. Stop looking outside of yourself for these answers. They're all within you right now. God sowed into you great and unique blessings and gifts that are special to you, whether it's your math skills, your nurturing ability, your ability to communicate, your intensity, your passion, your relentlessness, your resiliency, whatever it might be, your engineering mind, whatever it is with you. Everything you need is within you right now. Society, especially with ladies, are constantly messaging, you're not enough, lose weight, be prettier, do this, wear that, right? We're constantly messaged, we're not enough, and that's why people don't win. They come from a place of scarcity. They come from people who think, well, once I get there, I'll win. Once I get to this, I'll win. Then I'll be happy. You can win right now. That doesn't mean you don't want to improve. Doesn't mean you're not going to grow. I'm saying in this time and space, at this very moment, you are enough to win. And the minute you accept that, the minute you know what you're worth, because you only get out of life what you believe you're worthy of, what you believe you deserve. It's hard to accept this, but you are getting right now in your life what you will tolerate, what you will accept. That's what you're getting. You're getting what you will accept. Malcolm X has this great quote. He says, that which you do not hate, you will eventually tolerate. You gotta hate your conditions and accept the fact that you're worth more and that everything you need to win is within you right this very second, and that you're enough as you show up presently today to win, to make your dreams happen.
Oh man, I'm gonna listen to that over and over and it's over true. Again. Thank you so much, Ed.
Yeah.
How can people know more about you, listen to your podcast, and connect with you?
They're probably sick of me by now, but
no.
If they're not.
They are just getting started.
You could, I'm on Instagram. I've got a podcast on all the platforms called Max Out with Ed Mylett. That's also on YouTube as well, any of the social media platforms. And then I have a website, edmylett.com, which is M-Y-L-E-T-T.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
Man, are you fired up or what? Time to go out and change the world to max out and have no more excuses. Get up fast and get back on track, as Ed said. So let me know what you think of today's show. Head over to iTunes and give us a review and a 5-star ranking. We're going to be hearing more from Ed Mylett soon, and he'll be attending one of my workshops too. Because again, he's always looking for that slight edge. Now, if that sounds like you, then you need to join me at a Perfect Life workshop, where I will walk you through a proven step-by-step blueprint for success. You're also going to get a year of follow-up coaching and accountability from me, just like I've given to my clients like Sharon Srivatsa, the billion-dollar real estate man, and Super Bowl champion Steve Weatherford, and eight-figure female business owners like Shanda Sumpter and Isabel de los Rios, along with thousands of other entrepreneurs in dozens of industries. So let's get you started on your coaching journey and give you the accountability you need to succeed. Visit PerfectLifeWorkshop.com to apply to work with me at my next coaching event near you.